holding on Chof Vav on the day about more past the middle of the Yomid line than 40 to Ezra. 7 lines, an hour lines. Okay. We talked about in the Mishnah the dinim about a Jewish woman being a midwife for a goita and vice versa, a Jewish woman nursing a goyish baby and vice versa. And we also talked about how this works under normal circumstances, how it works when there's Ava and so forth. So now we're going to have a related discussion about an issue, another medical issue between Jews and goyim. Turn it up on him. Yisrael malas ha'ovid kachavim l'shum ger.
A Jew is allowed to give a bris milah, to a goy, where he's doing it for ger.
And the Gemara interjects, what does that mean, l'shum ger, as opposed to what? La puki l'shum murana d'loy, as opposed to if he's doing it because the goy has a murana, which is some kind of worm or some kind of pathological condition on his foreskin, then the yid would not be allowed to do it because we said before in the previous part of the Gemara, actually this is the major connection, is the previous part of the Gemara we talked about ovdi kachavim le meridin vle malin, that at least under certain circumstances, goyim ovdi avodah zarah, we don't lower them into a pit, like we don't do things to cause them to die. On the other hand, we don't save them, like Mylin, we don't save their lives. This would be to save his life, therefore not.
Well, who said it would be to save his life?
Well, what else? The point is, he has this murana. If he doesn't do something about it, then eventually it's gonna harm him.
Not necessarily.
But that's the point. In other words, it's still loy Mylin, loy Merid. It means anything that would improve his health. They're removing his Arla in order to get rid of the Marana.
Just to improve his health.
Whatever, that's the point is that eventually it would spread. The point is eventually if it was left untreated, apparently it would spread and it would call, yeah. Okay. There is, by the way, I mean, most of the discussion over here, actually, so we have that little bit of the discussion. The rest of the discussion is going to be the other way around. Most of the rest of the discussion is going to be the other way around, about a goy doing a bris milah for a Jew. So I just want to mention, which we'll see, 1 second, but just to mention real quick, so now you have, when you get down to it, though, there was a third possibility why a goy might want a bris milah. He might want a bris milah just because he wants to participate in the mitzvah. He's not mitzvah v'oise, he's not obligated to do it, but he wants to participate. Would that be a valid reason for a Jew to make him a bris milah? We're saying if it's for geiros, then yes. If it's for merana, then no. What if it's because he wants to participate in the mitzvah?
Yeah.
So the Rambam writes in one of his trovas that sure, in general, most mitzvahs, a goy is allowed to do voluntarily. He doesn't get as much schar on them as a Jew who's mitzvah v'oise, but nevertheless he could. So therefore there would be no problem.
The question if the goy can, it's a question.
No, the question is a yid is allowed to do it. That's the point, right?
So what is the Rambam saying?
So the Rambam is saying, therefore, that a Jew would be allowed to, because fine, a goy is allowed to do most mitzvahs, so therefore a Jew doing it for him is not a problem. In Shulchan Aruch, on the other hand, it brings that a Jew should not do a bris milah for a ger unless it's l'shem gerus, based on our Gemara over here. So, one second. So the Shach understands based on the Shach understands that all the Mechaber is saying is don't do it when it's l'shum murana, when it's because of their health, because ain't lo meridin v'lemayel. But according to him, the Shulchan Aruch is not really taking a position on the question what happens if he's doing it because he wants to participate in the mitzvah. Maybe according to the Mechaber, it would be allowed. On the other hand, the Taz learns that it means that not like that, we don't say like the Rambam says the Taz, because the fact is bris milah is something special for the descendants of Abraham. We know the famous thing that Abraham stands at the gates of Gehenna and won't let anybody in who has a bris milah. So therefore, it's inappropriate, he says, to take that special siman of the covenant between us and Hashem and apply it to a goy where he's not doing it for the sake of joining the bris that we Jewish people have.
A Muslim is not
chayiv in bris milah either. I mean, the truth is actually that's not. No. So you have, they do it. They do it according to their laws. We learned in Sanhedrin actually that Bnei Keturah are chayiv in milah. But first of all, who are Bnei Keturah versus not? Nowadays they're all mixed up. And second of all, you have a machlokes rishonim, whether that means only the original six sons who were born to Keturah or whether it means all their descendants. The Rambam, for example, holds that all Bnei Keturah of all generations are chayiv in it. However, nowadays they're mixed up with Bnei Yishmael, and therefore they're not. Yeah, but okay. So anyway, the point is, so the Shach apparently would understand to say that like the Rambam, that if he wants the bris milah because he wants to do the mitzvah, then fine. Whereas the Taz disagrees with that.
What about coming back to Kitzim Urana? If you have a Jewish doctor who would not be allowed to do a bris
So one second. So again, so that's the usual rule. So when we discussed, that's what we discussed yesterday, loy merid and loy mylin, we discussed how does that work out nowadays. Nowadays, we don't necessarily apply these dinim because first of all, maybe they only apply to Ovdei Kochavim, maybe even they only apply to the seven nations of Canaan. Right. There can be the matter of Ava, right? Yeah. So because of all of that, not necessarily do we apply these halachas in practice nowadays. And therefore, in other words, it would be no different. In that sense, it wouldn't really be any different than any other medical condition. Again, maybe according to the Taz, not, because Mila is a special thing for the Jewish people, but other than that...
Is general health considered the same thing as Marana, right? Because
Marana just means an example. It's an example of something that would affect his health, right?
But there could be a difference, though, a preventative health thing, that they're doing that, you know, this is for general health for the rest of his life versus...
Could be. Anyway, but over to Chavim Lo Yomu Yisrael, continues the Gemara, a goy should not do a bris milah for a Jew, because goyim are suspect of murder, and we're concerned, what might he do when the yid is under his control? Divir Meir. But Chachamim, I mean, Chachamim say no. Well, right, this is the same thing as Rav Meir said before, about a goyish woman nursing a Jewish baby, or delivering a Jewish baby, or whatever. Here's another example. But wait, Chachamim Oimrim, one second, we're going to see why Rav Meir has to point it out over here. The Chachamim say a goy is allowed to circumcise a Yisrael, a Yid, when there are other people standing there to make sure that he doesn't try anything funny, like we had before by the midwife and by the nurser. Avol beinu lebeinu loy, but not if they're one-on-one. Now, why does Rav Meir say, even if there's other people? Well, what's the reason exactly? What are we concerned exactly that we're afraid the goy is going to do? So we said, with a midwife, she can press on the baby's skull and kill him. What is he going to do, press on the guy's skull and kill him? No. Well, that's what we said. The answer is, because what the goy may do when he's doing the bris,
he may put the knife on an angle,
and it would not do a straight cut, but an angled cut. And then he makes that part of the Ava is cut off, and now the guy is also lover b'kohol. He will never be able to be. He'll never be able to have children. So therefore, the mayor is concerned about that. Whereas the chachamim are not. So the question is, so you're telling me that a mayor holds that a goy is not allowed to do a bris milah for a Jew? Now, before we get into the question whether a bris milah is valid if it's done by a goy, we're going to get into that point soon. On the face of it, what we're saying is, so far, both opinions in...
Hold on.
So far, it seems from the two opinions that we have in the Braisa that neither one of them in principle has a problem with somebody who's not a ben bris himself making a bris. The only problems are the practical ones. Your mayor saying that there's a practical consideration they may make him a curse shofa. The chachamim not being concerned about that as long as there are other people around to observe. But so we have to figure out. The sovereign of mayor over to chachamim loy. Are you telling me that a mayor holds that a goy should not do a bris milah for a Jew? Or a minu? I have a contradiction. A braisa says, ir she'en bar roi for Yisrael. If you have a city where there's no Jewish doctor, and by doctor we mean a moyel, there's no Jewish moyel. V'yeshba roifei kusi v'roifei ovid kechavim. However, in that town, you have a doctor that is a moyel. Because, practically speaking, a person who knew how to do a bris milah in those days was usually a general practitioner as well. They didn't have specialization like nowadays, where a person specializes in one area of the body and then makes a whole career out of it. In those times, they were more generalists. Anyway. In this city, you don't have a Jewish doctor,
but you have a Kusim doctor. And again, we discussed before, the Kusim are sort of like halfway between Jews and Goyim,
at least according to the opinion that they're Geirei Emes. And you have a Roifa Ovid Kochavim. You have a doctor who's a Goy, a full-fledged Goy.
Which one is preferable to do the Brit Mila? Yomol Ovid Kochavim
Kusi, Divir Rameir. Rameir says, better let the Goyish a doctor do the Brit Mila rather than the Kusi. For reasons that the Gemara is going to discuss soon. It actually explains briefly over here. The reason is,
usually, goyim usually don't do bris milah at all. Therefore, if a goyish doctor is doing a bris milah, circumcision, we don't have any reason to think that he's doing it for avodah zarah, with avodah zarah in mind.
It's not like a particular ritual that they have anything to do that they do in their religion. Whereas kusim, they do bris milah, because again, they follow everything it says in Torah Shabbat. But the difference is, the kusim, The Kutzim made a big thing out of Har Grizim, one of the mountains near Shechem, as being the holy place. They even made actually one of their version of the Aseret HaDibros. The last Dibra is that to make Har Grizim holy. So in different places in the Torah, there's a number of places that they fortified and changed the wording and whatever to make it to make it that Har Grizim is something special. One of them the Gemara actually references in Sota. Anyway. The point is, if a Kusi is doing it, we have reason to be concerned that he may be doing it in honor of whatever it is they worship, their Getchka or whatever that they worship on Har Grizim. Therefore, a mayor is saying, better let the Goy do it, where we're not concerned that he's going to have any Machshavas Zarek.
Don't we have a concern that if a Goy does it, that he has no experience in doing that by definition?
Here we're talking about, evidently, he has experience, obviously.
He has experience.
Okay, but actually, you know what? We'll see soon. Tosfos is going to point out, actually, when we get into the Gemara, we haven't yet gotten into the question about whether the doctor is a known expert or not, but Tosfos says in a little bit, even if he's a known expert in other things, not necessarily in Bris Milah, nevertheless, he wants to preserve his professional reputation, and therefore he'll make sure to do the Bris Milah also as accurately as possible.
That's fine. But that doesn't prevent him from doing something that's not appropriate because he just doesn't know.
Okay, but obviously we're talking about where one or the other of them will know what they're doing.
Because he was trained in it.
Because he was trained. He has a general training in this kind of thing, right.
Anyway, sort of mayor says
better luck than good. Okay, okay, hold on. Okay.
Never mind Marana. The point is that we're talking about obviously people who are going to know what they're doing. So the mayor is saying that the mayor is saying better luck than going to do it rather than the Kusi, because the Kusi may have had Grizim in mind.
Rabbi Huda says no, better let the Kusi do it rather than the Goy, because the Goy is, again, a suspect on Shvichos Damim, whereas the Kusim are not. So we see that Rameyer is saying better let a Goyish doctor do it. How does that fit with what he just said before, that Rameyer was saying that in the first Braita that we quoted, that a Goyish doctor should not... Yeah, right, Rameyer is contradicting himself.
Well,
that's the question. We have to reconcile that.
Right.
So the answer is April. We flip it around.
So then that way it'll fit. The mayor is being consistent with his opinion. Goyim are so cautious on Shvichos Damim or on making the Kus Shachar.
Therefore, even if there are other people around that doesn't help, they better let the Kusi do it. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, very nice, but on the other hand, the Kusi, we're concerned he's going to be having in mind how Grizim. As long as there are other people around, I'm not so worried about the Goy doing Shvichos Damim, therefore better let the Goy do it. Okay. Now the problem becomes the suburb of Yehuda over Kuchavim Shapir Dami. So are you saying based on that it's fine for a Goy to do a Bris Milah? V'hatanya, but we learn a Braiser of Yehuda Omer. Minayin L'milah v'over Kuchavim Sheep Sula. How do we know that a Bris Milah done by a Goy is possible? Shenema, because the pasuk is after as Brisi Tishma. Hashem says to Avram, you should keep my covenant, meaning only people who are part of the covenant, only people who are members of the Jewish people can do a Bris Milah. So now you have a problem, no matter which side you take. Right, if you're going to say that Rameyer is the one who says a Goyish doctor should do it, you have the problem that he said before a Goyish doctor was choshed on Shvichos Damim. If you say Rabbi Yehuda is the one who says a Goyish doctor should do it, then you have the problem that we're saying in this Bright that he holds that such a Bris is possible. So what is it? Elul Olam Lo Tebo. So no, the answer is that don't flip it, leave it the way it was before. Here, what we're talking about, though, is we're not just talking about any old doctor. We're talking about an expert doctor. He has a reputation to maintain. So that's the point. That's what I was saying. That Tosfos says, even if he's not particularly expert in Milah, even if he has not done really a lot of Bris Milahs before, nevertheless, he wants to protect his reputation, and therefore, if he's willing to undertake this Bris Milah, then we can assume that he's going to do it in such a way that he's going to preserve his reputation. He doesn't want to lose his professional reputation that people are there. So that would be fine.
But it still exposes the...
Yeah, well, so the mayor is saying you shouldn't have a goy treated Jew because he's cautious on Shvichos Damim, but if
that goy is a roif and mumcha, then it's allowed. And in fact, by the way, in Shulchan Aruch it also brings, the Rama brings an opinion, which actually is more relevant to the next Mishnah, but whatever. So the Rama actually says that this is more generally true. This that we're saying, we're going to learn in the next Mishnah, that you shouldn't be treated by a goyish doctor. One exception is, again, it to be the mumcha based on this. And another exception is the chlal, that Rama brings an opinion from Rishonim, if you're paying him a fee. Because, again, he doesn't want to lose his fee.
That's what the Rashi is.
No, not necessarily. He could be doing it pro bono.
No.
It could happen. Sometimes doctors treat people for free.
The Rashi is shaking
it on the line. I don't see. Why is it a shaykh? Sometimes you have doctors. Sometimes will volunteer their services. How many stories do you hear of where a person has had to undergo an operation that costs six figures or whatever, and the doctors waive their fees as a charity?
People don't have the money.
That's the point. So that's the point. In other words, there would be a difference whether you're paying him or not. He doesn't want to lose his fee. So therefore, even if he doesn't have such a professional reputation to maintain, nevertheless, though, there's reason to be mateful, says that Amar brings, because he doesn't want to lose his fee.
But if you can't, patient cannot pay the RFA.
What is that?
Who has a professional reputation. He's not going to do it because he's a mumche.
I don't understand. What does that have to do with it? The doctor chooses to do it. That's it. We're talking about, are you, the Jew, allowed to have a British doctor treat you when they
to pay
it? One thing is if you pay him.
He's a mumche.
Then, we're saying mumche is loy mora nafshe. He's not going to lose his professional reputation.
Therefore, if he takes the case.
Right. So, in other words, okay. So you have a mumcha who is being the mumcha, regardless whether he's being paid or not, or an amateur if he's being paid.
Okay.
Again, that second one is not agreed to by everybody. But yeah. Okay.
Regardless of whether he pays or not.
Right. The author of Dimi Omer of Yechanan, because we know this, because when Rav Dimi came, from Eretz Yisrael, he reported in the name of Rav Yechanan, Im hoyam mumcha l'rabim mutter, that if this is a doctor who's a professional and has a public reputation, then it's mutter. Okay. So now, though, the question becomes the suburb of Yehuda Kusi Shapur Dami. Fine. So what are we saying then? We're saying that in the last braisa that we quoted, Rabbi Yehuda is the one who's saying that better let the Kusi do the Bris Mila rather than the Goy. The question is, does Rabbi Yehuda hold that a Kusi is able to do a valid Bris Mila? Valtanya, but we learn in another braisa.
Yisrael Molach a Kusi, a Jew is allowed to do a Bris Mila for a Kusi. The Kusi va Yomo Yisrael, but a Kusi should not do a Bris Mila for you, because the Yehuda says the problem is the Kusi is going to have in mind how grizzin, they're holding place with their gestures and never on it.
When
what part? If we say that the Kusi is Geirei Emes, then fine, they're considered part of the covenant. However, they have in mind.
How can they be Geirei Emes if they don't keep the Shulchan Aruch? I mean, the Torah Shabbat Day.
Because at one point they were Geirei Emes, and then afterwards, okay, so they regressed. I mean, you have in the Pesukim anyway, it describes that at first they were worshipping Hashem as well as Lahavdil the Avodah Zarah. Obviously, that's not Geirei Emes, but there's an opinion throughout Shaf that eventually they became Geirei Emes. Okay, after they became, they ended up being careless with the Dinim Dirabanan or whatever. Still doesn't take away.
So we're only talking about the Tirud, they're over Avodah Zarah.
No, so eventually they discover that they're worshipping a dove on Hagrizim. But even before that, it was a known thing that they have Hagrizim as their holy place. So in that sense, during those hundreds of years, in a certain sense, they were sort of like the Jews of the Aseret HaShvatim, who actually, of course, lived in their territory. What are the Jews of the Aseret HaShvatim, beginning from Yerovam? They argued that the Beit Mikdash is not the place that Hashem chose. Instead, we have our Eglei Azov in Basel and in Don. Didn't make them Ois Jews. They're still Jews. They're just Jews who are doing Aver. Well, by the same logic, if the Kusim hold that Hagrizim is the place that Hashem chose, okay, it's very wrong, obviously it's Osir and Chayiv Karis and so on and so forth, nevertheless.
They didn't keep the Torah Shabbat they kept Torah Shabbat Pei, that's a big
thing. Okay, but apparently the Kusim, so the Kusim maybe picked and chose or whatever, but the point still remains that if we say that Kusim, Geirei Emes, it means at some point they did accept Torah Shabbat Pei. Afterwards they threw it off, okay, fine. So we're talking from that point until there became a point when the Chachamim discovered that they're actually worshipping an image on how Grizim, and then they made them Goyim Gmurim. Okay. So the problem is, we're talking during that period. After the acceptance, but before, according to the opinion, again, you have the opinion that they were never Geirei Emes anyway. You have the opinion in Shas that they were Geirei Arayas, that they only became Geirei because of the line. Then we wouldn't be having this discussion, obviously.
But they're asking now in the time where they are over the Avodah Zarah.
No, we're not. We're asking in the time before they no.
Because they're saying L'shem HaGrizim.
No, L'shem HaGrizim, fine, means that they hold that it's the place that Hashem chose. Right. We don't know that they're worshipping an image over there, that they only discovered in Remeir's time. Yeah.
Because that's how we said Avodah Zarah.
Rashi mentioned V'Ovdin La'Avodah. and he brings from Cholin that Rashi actually says Molin is b'nei l'shem yonazu, right? So according to Rashi, actually it probably would come out that they're doing l'shem avodah zarah, because an image of a dove is avodah zarah. And of course, Rashi brings from the Gemara and Cholin over there that eventually they discovered they're worshiping an image of a dove.
That's
the point at which they declare them going more.
Exactly.
Right. So Rabbi Yehuda, is saying, apparently even before that, that will concern they're doing all the shame hagrizim and therefore no good, or they're doing, or even if not, even if after, even if after, even if after. The point is that a goy is one thing. A regular run of the mill goy is not going to be doing the mila l'shem avodas kachavim, because mila is not part of their rituals anyway. Oh. But the kusi may be doing the shame hagrizim. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Amalei Rabbi Yosi. So Rabbi Yosi says to Rabbi Yehuda, so what's the problem? So where do we ever find the concept in the Torah that mila has to be l'shma? As long as the mila is done, who cares whether it's l'shma or not?
Can you do a
mila? Well, why? So Tosfos points out that now we have certain dinim. We know there are certain halachas where you have to have l'shma. For example, writing a sefer Torah, writing a get, etc. So could have been l'shma. But the difference is just that we made the same sale, just for the sake of shade. It doesn't have to be made. In fact, a silka built by Goy in this culture, for example, a silka built by Kulsin. But no. So Tosfos makes the distinction as follows. Mila, the essential thing is that the mila is done. Mistama, unless he says specifically that he does it, l'shem ha'rizim, then it's good. Therefore, Goy is assuming that Stam, he doesn't have anything particular in mind. Therefore, Rabbi Yosi is arguing it should be fine. As opposed to, for example, a get doesn't necessarily have to be written. Now, your average married woman is not going to be divorced. A sefer Torah is not going to be written unless somebody is actually writing it l'shem Torah Yisrael. So therefore, those kinds of things have to be done l'shma. Masa would be another example. Tosfos doesn't bring it, but okay, masa would be another example. But mila is not arguing doesn't have to be done l'shma.
Don't you have to do the mila l'shem brief?
Do you? Not necessarily. And anyway, over here, okay, well, that's what Rabbi Yosi is arguing. So Rabbi Yosi argues, let the kusi go ahead, do bris milas until his soul leaves him. That's a derogatory way of talking about the kusim. In other words, let him pager doing bris milas, but at least let him do it. The point, though, being that Rabbi Yehuda clearly is saying that a kusi should not do a bris milah, and yet we're saying in the previous braisa that he says, if you have a choice between a goyish and moil and a kusi moil, let the kusi do it. Rabbi Yehuda is contradicting himself.
Right.
No, so now we come back, we're going to reverse the original braisa that we quoted, the one where we had Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda. We're going to say Rav Meir is saying that let the kusi do the bris, because he disagrees with Rav Yehuda about the concern about him having in mind hagrizim, whereas Rav Yehuda is saying, don't let the kusi do it because he has hagrizim in mind, better let the goy do it. The reason why we couldn't do that is because we found a contradiction within Rabbi Yehuda, where we had another braisa where Rabbi Yehuda said that if a goy does a bris milah, it's possible. So how do we reconcile that? The answer is hahi did Rabbi Yehuda nasi. That braisa that says that a goy's bris milah is possible because the other bris tishmar is not Rabbi Yehuda, the regular Rabbi Yehuda bris goy. That is Rabbi Yehuda nasi. Well, that's a different Tana. He's entitled to argue. Tanya, as we learn in a braisa, Rabbi Yehuda hanasi. Minayin l'mila v'chavim shi tzola. How do we know that a mila done by a goy is possible? Shenet hamadlam v'atar esbisi tishmer. Because it says, you, Abram, should keep my covenant. So therefore, so fine. So we have a few different...
You cannot see the lishma from this passage.
No. V'atar esbisi.
Brisi,
fine, very nice. You should do my bris by doing the circumcision, by doing the actual cutting of the orla. Doesn't necessarily mean. We're going to see soon. The next thing the Gemara is going to talk about is where Rabbi Yehuda gets that it has to be lishma.
Can you explain that last
question? Okay, so the last braisa is saying, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi is saying that if a goy does a mila, it's possible, because the bris mila has to be, but after you, meaning Abraham, and other people like you, should be keeping my covenant and doing the bris mila. So therefore, goy is not part of that, and therefore it's possible. So far, in other words, we have a few different opinions.
We have both doing it and keeping it.
Right. So therefore, in other words, so he would say, So we have several opinions so far. We have some of the Tanoim will say that a bris milah done by a goy is kosher. So we have then Rav Meir saying that a goy should not do it because we were kosher to mashvichul damim. Rav Yehuda saying a kuzi shouldn't do it because he had in mind hagrizim. And then we have Rebbe who's saying it's a moot point whether a goy can do it or not. Even if we're not concerned about shvichul damim, it won't be a valid bris milah. The halacha, by the way, is like that.
Because
it's not done by somebody who's part of the covenant himself.
Right.
Never mind whether it has to be done with Shema, but the point is it has to be done by them. What? No. No, because that's what we're saying. That's what we said before. We said that was her very key point. A kursi will have it. That was the point that we discussed before. That a kursi is going to specifically have Hagrizim in mind. A goy is not necessarily going to have anything in mind. Rav Yossi is arguing it shouldn't matter whether he has Hagrizim in mind or nothing in mind. Either way, it should be equally valid. But even if we say, like Rav Yehuda, that fine, Hagrizim would be a problem if he just does it staff according to Rav Yehuda. It's not a problem. Therefore, he says a goy can do it. But whereas Rav Yehuda HaNasi is saying no, that never mind the kavana. The fact is, only somebody who's a member of the Bris himself, which is the Jewish people,
that's in a way it's the kavana.
No, but it is. It has nothing to do with the kavana, and that's actually the halacha. And therefore, as we know, that's the well known fact that if a person had a circumcision done in a hospital or whatever by a goy, they need hatafas dam bris later. They need a drop of blood extracted from that area. Okay. Amar of Chista, my time is Rav Yehuda. So Rav Chista says, so what's Rav Yehuda's reason? Why does he say that the bris milah actually has to be done l'shma? Where did he get that concept from? Dichtiv l'ashem himo. Because you have a pasuk like this. It says in connection with the Korban Pesach, if a person becomes a ger and he makes a Pesach for Hashem, himo loikol zachar, make a bris milah for all the males in his household, and then he can have the Korban Pesach. So Rav Yehuda learns from the way the fact that it says l'ashem himo means it has to be for Hashem. It has to be l'shma. It has to be l'shma, right? What does Rabbi Yossi answer to that? He says, no, the l'ashem does not go with, he says, no, but you have the pasuk continue, the pasuk, a different pasuk in Parshas Lech Lecha, when it first introduces bris milah, says, himo yimo.
Yeah,
circumcise, he should circumcise. One second. Well, we're going to see how each one of them explains the other one's pasuk. Relax. But the point is that himo yimo is a ribui. It means any kind of bris milah is acceptable, whether it's done l'ashem or not. Therefore, Rabbi Yossi would say, even if it was done l'shem hagrizim is no problem, how much more so if it was done l'stam? Yeah, two psukim. Wait, so the idah chaksiv l'ashem himo. So what does Rabbi Yossi do with Rabbi Yehuda's pasuk l'ashem himo? The answer is he would say, oh, we're Pesach. See, the word l'ashem has nothing to do with the word himo over there. The word l'ashem is referring to Pesach, but also Pesach l'ashem. Both of Pesach Lashem, that it goes together to teach us that the Korban Pesach is one of the only korbanos where you have a din and has to be done l'shma. In general, we're going to learn in a few months' time in Zvachim, Bez Hashem, beginning after Pesach, that most korbanos, if the avodas of them are done shaloi l'shma, so the kohen or whoever it is, or whoever it is shechting, or the kohen who's doing the Kabbalah and the Zrika and whatever, if he has in mind that it's some other korban. With most other korbanos, it is a kosher korban. It just doesn't count to fulfill the owner's chiyuv. He has to bring another korban, but the original korban is
whether it's
l'shma or not. So, for example, let's say a person brings an oila, and the kohen, when he's shechting it or sprinkling the blood or what have you, has in mind, let's say that it's a chatas, it'll still be a valid oila. You still continue the avodas. You still burn the pieces of it. You still sprinkle the blood on the mizbeach and burn the pieces on the mizbeach. The owner has not been yoytze his chiyuv to bring a korban oila. He has to bring another one. A Pesach and also a chatas are the two exceptions to that. That if the kohen or whatever, whoever it is, if the person has in mind something that makes it shaloi l'shma, the korban is completely possible. You stop right there, and the korban is treated as a possible korban and then taken outside the bit. Pesach and chatas. Yeah. So where do we learn it by Pesach? Because it says Pesach l'Hashem. Because it says over here Pesach because it says Pesach l'Hashem. So therefore, Rabbi Yossi says nothing to do with l'Hashem himo. The Lashem. It's in the same pasuk. You have also Pesach Lashem. Himo loy kol zachar. So it goes to that. Goes on the Pesach. Yeah. Okay. The idach nami hoksiv himo yimo. What does Rabbi Yehuda do with Rabbi Yossi's pasuk himo yimo, which is a ribui? He says, okay, divrei Torah kolashim ne'adam, as we often say in Shas. But fine, the Torah speaks in common language. The common way of speaking in those days is to use an infinitive like that, and therefore the Torah also does it. Not necessarily that it's meant to be any kind of ribui.
Why can't you take a kalachum after the Pesach? Even though you say Lashem goes on Pesach, if Pesach affects all the generations, it should affect all the generations.
You can't make a kalachum like that. No, because they have nothing to do with each other.
They have in common.
I don't understand what they have in common.
Pesach goes to all generations.
And the Milah goes to all generations. You don't make a kalachum from one to the other. They have that. Okay. Fine. Itmar. So now we have a discussion among Amoraim about this point. Minayim l'mila ba'ov kuchavim sheipsula. How do we know that a mila done by a goy is possible? So far we have the opinion of Rabbi Yossi Agrili, of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, saying that and bringing from the pasuk of Atas Brisi Tishmo. But now we have a discussion about that. That's what he said. Atas, you as Brisi Tishmo. So the other Tanoim would hold that brisi just means the physical act of bris milah, which is the expression of my covenant. Therefore, it doesn't matter if it's done l'shma or not. Rabbi Yehuda Anasi is focusing on the va'ata. Okay. Dorei bar papa mishmei derav alma va'ata es brisi tishmer. So dorei bar papa, this is, you know, we have the 10 sons of our papa that we mentioned at the end of the theorem. Right. Here's dorei bar papa. Here's where he shows up.
He was the oldest.
Hey, wasn't he? No, it says he was the oldest. Yeah, yeah. Chanini bar papa, Rami bar papa, etc. Dore is somewhere in the middle of it. Anyway. So Dore bar papa said in the name of Rav.
Tell me again what we mentioned.
There's a few reasons they represent the Asar Sadibris. They represent the Asar Mamoros. The Rav Papa used to call them all together when he had a seum, whatever. It's not so simple. Not necessarily were they all the actual sons of the famous Amora Rav Papa. Papa was a common enough name in those times. That some of them could have been the sons of other people named Papa. Okay, anyway. Especially over here, he's called Dore bar Papa rather than Dore bar Rav Papa, but whatever, anyway. So he says in the name of Rav, because V'ata es brisi tishmer, the same passage that we quoted before, you, Abraham, and people like you should keep my bris, implying not goyim. But Rabbi Yechanan says from a different passage, Himel Yimel, from the passage Himel Yimel, which we can reread, the first word Himel, we can read it Hamol. We can read it therefore Hamol Yimel. The one who has a milah is the one who should Yimel, who should do a bris milah for others.
Which is only a yid.
Yeah. So the question is, Hamol Yimel, yeah. Okay.
But then not the Atta.
In other words, not from the Atta, but Himol Yimel. Right. So the question is, my Benai, what's the practical difference between these two explanations? The answer is, Arvi Mohol, the Gavnuni Mohol, Iku Benai. The Nafkimino between them would be, what if you have an Arab who is circumcised, or a Gavnuni who is circumcised? What is a Gavnuni? So you have Rishonim, actually, who mentioned that they had a Girsay in front of them, Givoni, but they have a problem with that. Of course, a Givoni can do a bris milah. A Givoni is a full-fledged Ger. They're not allowed to intermarry into the Jewish people because they were cruel, etc., but other than that, they're full-fledged Gerim. So there's no question. Of course, a Givoni can do a bris milah just like any other Ger. No, Gavnuni, therefore, is, so they say it, it's evidently some other nation descended from Abraham, maybe Taka, one of the descendants of Keturah, whatever, who lived among the mountains, Horim Gavnuni, like we say in Tilim, right. And they also kept bris milah as a practice among them.
Do we know where it is?
No, not necessarily. But the point is, Manda Amo Himo Yimel Ika. So according to Rabbi Yochanan's thing that we learned from Himo Yimel very well, they are circumcised, therefore they can do a valid bris milah. Whereas according to the opinion, according to Dore bar Papa in the name of Rav, who brings it from Va'ata as Brisi Tishmer, Va'ata, then no, Lekka, then you don't have that, because even though the Arvim and maybe the Gavnunim are descended from Abraham, we know the Gemara tells us elsewhere, or the Pasuk tells us, Kibi Yitzchak, Yikara Lachazara, only Yitzchak is considered the legitimate descendant of Abraham, Yishmael and Bnei Keturah are not, even among Bnei Yitzchak also, only Yaakov, not Esau, because Kibi Yitzchak, V'loi Kol Yitzchak. So therefore, they're not part of the Va'asa, so therefore they couldn't do a valid bris milah. So that would be the difference. If the Moyal is an Arab or a governor. Okay.
Because
after it's brisi tishma, right. Yeah. Okay. So the question is, Ulamanda Omo Himo Yimo Ika. So are you telling me that according to the opinion that learns it from Himo Yimo, you're saying that that an Arvi or a Gavnuni would be considered to be somebody who is circumcised and therefore they could do a valid bris milah? V'hatnan, what we learn in a Mishnah in Nedarim, Koinam Sha'ani Nena Min Ha'arelim, if somebody says a Neder, Koinam is a Lashon of Neder, that whatever I have Hana from the Arelim, from the uncircumcised people, should be also to me. Then Mutter Ba'ali Yisrael, he's Mutter in whatever he has Hana from Jews who are uncircumcised. For example, Meisu Echav Machnas Milah, as the Gemara is going to talk about soon. You can have Jews who are not circumcised because of medical reasons, because hemophilia or whatever. So he's Mutter in them, but also B'mulay Ovdi Kachavim, he's also to have Hana from circumcised Goyim, because of the, now Tosfos points out, if it was just a question from the Dorim, fine. We have a rule that with the Dorim, we go according to Loshim and Adam. We go according to the common understanding of terms. The common usage of Oral means a goy, and therefore, you can't really ask from that. But the point is, the real question is, that the Mishnah continues over there, that we have a source for it and a pasuk. Namely, you have a pasuk, ki chol ha-goyim arelim, that all the goyim are uncircumcised.
So Jews are arelim.
So therefore, a Jew who is an oral, he's still a Jew. He's considered, for this purpose, he's considered to be somebody who is circumcised. I physically do not. Physically, he has an orla. Doesn't matter. So he's part of the Jewish people who are a nation of people who have a Brit
Milah. It's an exception.
That's the point, in other words. So we're saying, in other words, so Alma, so we see from that, even though the Arabs of the Gavnunim are physically circumcised,
right.
They're not considered as if they were. The Pasuk Kichol HaGoyim Arelim still applies to them. Therefore, in terms of the Nedarim, therefore we say that they're still considered uncircumcised, and he wouldn't be allowed to have anah from them, even if they physically are. So you can't say that that's the Nafka Minah. An Arab or a Gavnuni, because they have the din of being uncircumcised, even if physically they are, of course, everybody would have to agree, both Rav and Rabbi Yochanan would have to agree that their bris milah is a pasul.
It's possible for them, but
it's not possible for a Jew, we're talking about, yeah. Ela, ikad beinayu Yisrael shemetu echav machnas milah v'loy malu. No, the nafka minah between them would be, what if the moel is himself a Jew, but his brothers died because of bris milah, therefore they didn't make him a bris, because that's the din. If you have, the Gemara discusses in Shabbos, if you have two sons, if a woman has two sons who had a milah and then they died, then we say the third son should not be given a milah until he gets older and stronger, because that means that hemophilia or whatever it is runs in the family. Also, if you have two sisters who have sons who die of bris milah, same thing, because these things are often transmitted through the female line, whatever. The point is that, so there you have an example where he doesn't have a bris milah because he couldn't, because medical reasons. So then the question would be, can he do a bris milah? Lamanda Omar v'atet brisi tishmer ika. According to the opinion that we're saying it has to be, you have to be like Abraham, then fine. He's like Abraham. He's a Jew. Therefore, he can do a valid bris milah. Lamanda Omar himo yimo like. But according to the opinion that he has to himself be circumcised, no good. Because he doesn't
even though he's Jewish.
Because even though he's Jewish, he physically doesn't have a bris milah. Okay, the problem is, so you're telling me now, according to that second opinion, according to Rabbi Yochanan's opinion that he's learning from Himmel Yimel, you're going to say, therefore, a Jew who's not circumcised is not allowed to do a bris milah. But we learn in that same Mishnah in Nedarim, if you made the neder the other way around, that whatever hana I have from mulim, from people who are circumcised, should be also to me like a korban, then it's the other way around. Also, he's also to have any hana from Jews who are uncircumcised, because again, even though they're physically uncircumcised, they're considered to be, they're part of the nation that has a bris milah, and therefore they're still considered mulim. Again, you have that pasuk kichol goyim arelim, implying that the Jewish people are not. And he's multiple mulah over kavim. Again, they're the Arabi or the Gavnuni or whatever, he would be allowed to have anah from them, because even though physically they're circumcised, in Inyan they're not. Anything that I have anah from mulim would be also. So he's allowed to have anah from the Arabim and the Gavnonim, because they're not considered mulim. Alma, so therefore we see Afagab Deloy Mehili. So we see then that even though Jew does not have a bris milah, Kamad de Mehili Jamu, nevertheless, it's considered as if he has a bris milah, and therefore he should be able to do a valid bris. So that can't be the Nafka Minah. There is, by the way, some discussion among the poskim. What about, for example, so here we're talking about a person who doesn't have a bris milah.
You'll have to make a valid neder.
What do you mean? Any person can make a valid neder. We're not talking, not the person himself who has or doesn't have a milah. We're talking about a regular run-of-the-mill yid who presumably has a bris milah.
Right.
He one day makes a neder. I'm not going to have any hanah from other people who have a bris milah.
Right.
From other people who don't.
I'll ask you five questions.
Yeah.
Someone doesn't have a milah. Is he considered able to make a neder?
Why not? He's a yid. Of course. Yeah. I'm not even understanding why there should be a question.
No.
The only thing he can't if he's a kohen, he can't serve in the Beis Hamikdash. He can't eat from korbanos. Yeah, of course he can put on tefillin. He's chayav b'chometz tishrei matara. The only thing is because the orla is something miyustik. Therefore, he's not allowed, if he's a kohen, he's not allowed to serve in the Beis Hamikdash. Call ben necho erol lev erol bato lo yava. He can be counted in a minion. But other than that, he can't serve in the Beis Hamikdash and he can't eat korbanos. There's no nafka minah between him and any other Jew. And according to our Gemara, he could even validly do a bris milah for another year.
So what is the meaning of brisi tishma?
You should keep my bris, but if he's physically unable, meaning he's doing everything that he could. In this case, he's medically unable to have a bris, so therefore that's
not. I'm not talking about someone who's medically incapable of having a bris. I'm talking about someone who doesn't have a bris.
So I was just going to say that the poskim do discuss the question, what if he's a mummer? What if he's a mummer, la'arla? He deliberately refuses to have a bris milah because he says the mitzvah doesn't apply to him, basically. Right. Would we say that he's able to do a bris milah or not? On the one hand, he has a mitzvah. On the other hand, since he's a mummer for it, maybe he should be considered, therefore, that he's also, he's not part of Gimel Yimel.
Right.
So, okay, you have a machloket on that point, I think, yeah. Okay. Anyway, so meanwhile, we're still trying to figure out what's the nafka minah between the two limudim, whether we learn from va'ata or whether we learn from himo yimo, who can make a bris and who can't. We've rejected the idea that it's a difference of an Arab or a governor. We've rejected the idea that it's a person that's mesu acham machas mila. So what is it? Ela ikabenayu isha. No, the nafka minah between them would be as far as can a woman do a bris mila. Lamanda omar va'ata es brisi tishmer leka. According to the opinion that we learn it from va'ata es brisi tishmer, you should keep my bris, then that doesn't work. The isha la bas milah. A woman is not capable of doing a bris milah. She doesn't have the relevant part. Therefore, we can't say that she's part of keeping the bris, and therefore she couldn't do a bris. Right. Ulamanda omar himo yimo ika. But according to the opinion of himo yimo, that we say hamol yimo, only somebody who has a bris can do a bris. That would work in her case. The isha kamanda mihila damya. Because a woman is considered as if she has a bris milah. So some of Farshim say, just because of the practical fact, the bris milah means that you don't have an orla. She doesn't have an orla, obviously, because she doesn't have the relevant parts at all. So therefore, that's it. So therefore, she's there. Therefore, it's considered that as if she has a bris milah. There's another different explanation that I think the Rif brings, that never mind that. The idea is, as we said before, the Jewish people are called a nation of circumcised people. A woman is part of the Jewish nation. Therefore, it's considered that she has a bris milah.
Right, brisi would have
spiritual
to women too.
Yeah, a spiritual brisi. Right.
Brisi would have to include
right.
women also.
Right.
I'm saying.
No, but if you say but after brisi tishma, it means only somebody who's actually physically capable of carrying out the bris milah on their body, which a woman can't.
Sure.
But if you say that we learn it from himo yimo, then it's considered she has a bris milah. She's born already circumcised.
So from this entire discussion, we can say that bris is both physical and spiritual.
Yeah, indeed.
It is both.
Yeah.
Except for women, obviously. But
well, so, yeah. Okay, so the question then becomes, "Mi ikalamanda ama ishaloi?" Do you really have an opinion that says that a woman cannot do a valid bris milah? Because that's what we're saying so far. It comes out that according to Dorei Bapapa Meshmei Rav, it would come out that a woman, if she does a bris milah, it would be possible because she's not part of Atas Brisi Tishma. But what about the Vatikas Tzipora Tzor? What about the story in Parashat Shmos where Tzipora took a sharp rock and did a bris milah for her son? So we see that a woman can do a bris milah. Now, it's before Matan Torah. It's true. Okay, the Gemara could have answered that it's different before and after Matan Torah, but the Gemara doesn't answer that for Pashtos because since the mitzvah of Bris Milah was given to Abraham to transmit to his descendants, the Jewish people, for all time. Okay, Nitna Torah and Eschad Shalacha. Fine. The Rambam writes elsewhere we don't keep mitzvahs nowadays because Hashem gave them to Abraham or to Yaakov or whatever. We keep them because they were re-given at Har Sinai. Nevertheless, though, the fundamental dynam of it shouldn't change, necessarily.
That's
the point. Right, the Avos kept the whole Torah, but that's not the point. So the Rambam discusses in Cholin, the Gemara talks about, in connection with Gid Anoshe, you have Machlokes there between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim, is it that they were given the mitzvah of Gid Anoshe at the time, after Yaakov was injured in his battle with the Malach, and they kept it from then on, or the Chachamim would said no, that it was given only at Matan Torah, and just the Torah wrote it in its place together with the story. So it's a machlokes, and then I'm right over there in Pirush HaMishnayos that in general the halacha is like the Chachamim in the sense that all mitzvahs that were given before Matan Torah, Bris Milah, Did Anoshe, we don't keep them now because they were given at that time, even the Shevet Mitzvah Nidah for that matter. We do them because they were re-given at Har Sinai.
But they kept them.
But the point is, in other words, the Gemara apparently is assuming that still that we shouldn't say that the dinim are going to be different between then and now unless we have some source for it.
Yeah.
So if it says where they're clearly that Tzipora took a rock and made a bris milah, then that should be valid.
Yeah.
The answer is kribe batakach. Yes, but you could reread the pasuk, not batikach she took, but rather batakach she made it be took. In other words, she told somebody else who was with them to take a rock and do it. Okay, vaksi batichreis. What about the pasuk continues? She cut off the orla. Again, the answer is kari bebatachreis. The amr le'in shachrin of oven. You could also read it as batachreis. She made it be cut off in the sense that she gave orders and it was done. And before we say, we're not even necessarily saying, it's not like we're saying a kriyuk siv or yesha em l'mikru or yesha em l'masoras or that kind of thing. We're not even saying that it can be read both ways. What we're saying is, we find sometimes that the Torah will attribute an action to the person who commanded that it be done, even though they didn't personally do it themselves. You have, let's say, for example, and it describes, for example, Shlomo building the Beis Mikdash. He didn't personally go and lay the bricks. He ordered it done, and it's called on his name. Come on. Because a king is not allowed to do malacha in public in front of the people. By the same logic, therefore, if it says that Tzipora took a stone and did the bris milah, it could mean that she gave orders, and therefore it's called by her name.
Okay.
So you don't have a proof. The boitema, or another possibility, you could understand the story. Yes, she came and started the process of bris milah, but also Moshe v'Agmona, but then Moshe, her husband, came and finished it. And therefore, so you could still say on that basis, not necessarily would a woman be kosher to do a bris milah. You can't necessarily prove it from those circuits. Now, who is the halacha like in the end? Can a woman validly do a bris milah? So, now, Tosfos points out, usually when we have a machlokas, Rav and Rav Yochanan, usually the halacha is like Rav Yochanan. On that basis, you should say that a woman is kosher to do a bris milah. Again, commanda mehilagami, she's considered as if she has a bris milah. Therefore, hamol yimo works. On the other hand, Tosfos says, the fact is, we see that Rav is agreeing with what Yehuda Anasi said before. He brought it from the same pasuk from Va'atar's Brisi Tishmer. So Tosfos brings the halachas gedolos paskins like Rabbi Yochanan that a woman can validly do a bris milah. Tosfos disagrees and says the halacha should be like Rav. So in Shulchan Aruch it brings both opinions that in principle the halacha is like the halachas gedolos. Tosfos disagrees because they say that we have not just Rav, we have also Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, who is from an earlier generation. He's a Tana. It's not so much a matter of Roy, it's a matter of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, the Tana, against Rabbi Yechon and the Amora. So therefore, the halacha ought to be like Rabbi.
Are the two psukim in steered to each other? Rathas Brisi Vehimo Yimo? I'm just trying to understand here where the...
Well, okay, I mean, on the face of it, there is a steered. I mean, obviously, each one would have to somehow understand the other one's positive. Probably the one who learns from Vatas Brisi Tishmer, Rav, would probably say Himil Yimil is Dibra Torah Koloshim Re'adam, so you can't learn anything from it. And Rabbi Yochanan, who learns from Himo Yimo, would say Va'after is Brisi Tishma. Okay, it doesn't mean Va'after doesn't mean only people like you. It can mean as long as the bris is accomplished. I don't know.
But it seems like there's also two dinin here. There's the din of who can do the bris milah, and then there's the din of who's chayil, who can have that dinin.
No, already said. No, that's what we're saying. That the woman is obviously not subject to the halachas of bris milah, but
right.
She is considered hamol. She is considered somebody circumcised.
Right.
Therefore, she could do yimo. On the other hand, she's not part of the achaz brisi tishma because she's not like Abraham in that sense, because she doesn't physically have that part.
But the question of a goy, like let's say, is a goy allowed to have a bris milah?
Oh, that's a different matter. That's what we discussed before. That's what we said. That you have, if it's for merona, if it's a matter of health, then it's loy meridin v'loy mailin. Then you're not allowed to, with the exceptions that we said before. Also, Tosfos points out before that if the schar, maybe it would be allowed. If you're getting paid for it. But if we're talking about a goy doing a bris milah, what?
Maybe it could also be learned from Va'ata, because Rashi is saying that it's not Ovdei Kochavim, right? That they
Va'ata excludes Ovdei Kochavim. The question is, does it also include women? Does it also exclude women? That's the question. According to Rav, it does. So anyway, so Tosfos says the halachas gedolos paskins like Rav Yochanan that a woman can validly make a bris milah. Tosfos themselves hold not. The halacha should be like Rav, that she cannot. In Shulchan Aruch, it brings both opinions. It says that, in principle, the halacha is she's kosher. However, we try as much as possible. So we go by the halacha's gedolos, and then most of the Rishonim also paskin like that. However, which is that it's kosher. However, in deference to the opinion of Tosfos, l'chatchila it shouldn't be done. But yeah, but if there's no man available, then you can have a woman do it. Okay. Mishnah says, Mitzvahin mehen ribri momen, you're allowed to be healed by a goy, by an Oved Kochavim. You're allowed to be healed by them ripui mon, a healing involving money. Avaloi ripui nefoshes, but not a healing involving skulls. What does that mean? We'll discuss in the Gemara a couple of possibilities and come to a conclusion. The point is that there can be a danger again. You have since goyim achoshet on shvichas damim, then there's the concern about what they might do to the patient. The in mistaprin behen machom mokum, divir Rameir. Rameir says you're not allowed to ever take a haircut from them anywhere, even if you near a shosarabim, because in those days they used sharp razors for you could easily cut cut the guy's neck. Yeah. The chamim, the shosarabim mutter, the chamim say, similar to what they were saying in the previous machlokes, if it's in or near a shosarabim, then it's allowed because they'll be afraid to try anything. Avalei beina labeina, but not one on one. So the Gemara says, my ripui mammon or my ripui nefashis. What do we mean by a healing involving money versus what do we mean by a healing involving nefashis, souls or lives? Ilema Ripui Momen Bishar, Ripui Nefarshas Bechinam. So you, for the first possibility is maybe Ripui Momen means when you're paying him. And Ripui Nefarshas would be when he's doing it for free, he's doing it pro bono. But like I was saying before, sometimes doctors will do these things for free. Tosfos, by the way, points out before, and you have this nowadays also, sometimes a doctor will do it for free to gain experience. Tosfos mentions in, before in connection, in the connection with the Jew doing something for a guy, Tosfos mentions there are two valid reasons why, aside from Ava, it includes Ava. There are two valid reasons why a Jew might be able to do it for a goy, even when we say limited and blame island. One is if he's being paid, because then there's a problem of Ava. What do you mean, I'm willing to pay you and you still don't want to treat me? Or the other possibility is where he's doing it to gain experience. Okay, so back to over here then. So if you're going to say that it means that you're not allowed to have a goyish doctor treat you for free, and in which case, how does that come to mean nefoshes? Rashi says, because the word nefesh can also mean desire. Im yeshes nafshechem, Avraham tells Bnei Chet, if you are willing to sell me a place, to get me a place, to bury my wife, then go talk to Ephraim, etc. So we see the word nefesh can mean a desire. So maybe ripui momen means therefore that you're paying him. Ripui nefoshes would mean he wants to do it. He's volunteering to do it. And therefore the Mishnah would be saying if you're paying him, it's mutter, and if you're not paying him, it's also. Then listening, why does the Mishnah phrase it such an odd way? Let the Mishnah just say straight out, you can be healed by them where it's for pay, but not for free. No. So we can't use that understanding. With that said, by the way, even though the Gemara rejects that understanding of the Mishnah, the Shach brings on Shulchan Aruch from earlier poskim, that it may after all be correct. Because as we were saying earlier on the Omud, for the same reason as he said that an expert doctor doesn't want to lose his professional reputation, by the same logic, if you're paying him, he doesn't want to lose his pay. So the Gemara is just saying that can't be the meaning of the Mishnah, but the halacha may still be a valid halacha. And in fact, it mentions over there in Shulchan Aruch that's the common practice. People all the time go to goyish doctors, even actual Oved Avodah Zarah, and don't have an issue with this, because it's bischar, because you pay him for it. Ella, no. Let's understand it rather like this. Ripui momen is davar she'ein bei sakana. Let's say, therefore, that ripui momen means something where there's no danger to life. It's just a minor injury or something. Ripui nefashas would be davar she'yesh bei sakana. And ripui nefashas would be something where there's danger involved. The problem with that is, va'amar Rav Yehuda, filu ribda de kofilta, lemet sinin minayu. But Rav Yehuda said that even if a person, let's say, had blood let, so now they have a puncture in their shoulder or whatever. Ribda de kusilta means the puncture of a bloodletting needle. So they would do bloodletting in those days because it's considered to be a healthy thing to get rid of excess bad leeches. Blood or whatever. What?
Leeches.
And not leeches is a different thing. This is they'd stick in a needle and then draw out a certain amount of blood.
Today.
Well, these days we don't do it so much to let blood. These days we do it for blood donations and whatever, because they're going to actually use the blood. In those days, they had the medical theory of the time was that a person has excess blood or bad blood or whatever, and you have to bleed it off, whatever. Anyway, the point is, so a person, let's say, has gone for bloodletting. Now they have a puncture in their shoulder from it or wherever. So now, let's say the person is starting to get infected or whatever. What?
In the shoulder,
Rashi says, Hamakas b'ksifayim, yeah. Okay. So now afterwards, the person who had this bloodletting done from his shoulder is now experiencing pain over there. So what we're saying is, Rav Yehuda is saying, you're not allowed to go to a goyish doctor even for that. So therefore, what do you mean?
That's the question. On the face of it, that's not a thing of sakana. So how come it's on the face of it? How is there a sakana involved? It's a puncture. It's a minor puncture.
So it's not a sakana.
We're not talking about a puncture like a bullet or something. We're talking about something like for a bloodletting needle. So right now it's hurting. It's got a little infected or whatever. On the face of it, we're not talking about something that's going to be a danger to life. It's not treated. And yet Rabbi Huda is saying you're not allowed to go to a goyish doctor for treating it. So you can't say it's a difference between whether there's a sakana or not. Ella, no. What we have to say is as follows. Ripui momen means behemtoi. Ripui momen that you're allowed to go to for a goy means with your money involved, with your possessions, your animal, for example. So you can go to a goyish veterinarian for him to treat your animal. Ripui nefoshes gufei, but ripui nefoshes that the Mishnah is saying you're not allowed to do would be where the person himself needs to be treated by the doctor. That would be awesome. And therefore, that fits with what Rabbi Yehuda is saying after the ribda de kusilta lemet sinin minayu, that even if a person has a puncture from bloodletting that he needs treated, he shouldn't go to a goyish doctor for it. Again, because they're choshered on shvichos damim.
How did the mama mean
either? And that's excluding if you...
So according to the first one, mama meant that you're paying him, because that's what mama means.
Right, okay.
According to the second one, we would think ripri mama means, for example, where there's no danger to life involved. There's danger that now you're going to be worth less, or you're not going to be able to work as effectively or whatever. So it's not something that involves sakonas nefashos.
Maybe your mama, a payment to your mama.
Yeah, okay.
That excludes
or your possession of the animal.
Again, so the Gemara here is not talking about a mumcha. We talked about a mumcha before. So we talked about a mumcha before, and then so the post can talk about that it applies over here also. We're talking about a non-mumcha.
Right.
Yeah, okay, fine. Omer of chista omer ma'okva. Actually, Tosfos further on makes a different distinction. Later on in the Gemara, we're going to have a statement by Rabbi Yochanan that any kind of injury that would be any kind of condition that would be serious enough to be mechal Shabbos for, you're not allowed to go to a goyish doctor for. So the question is, how does that fit with what Rabbi Yehuda is saying over here? Rashi learns they're actually arguing. Rabbi Yehuda is saying nothing, and Rabbi Yochanan is saying it depends how serious it is. Tosfos learns that not. Tosfos learns that they're not actually arguing. That what it is there's three different cases. You have a case where you can have a case where the person's life is in danger. There you shouldn't go to a goyish doctor, says Rabbi Yochanan, because what's going to happen? The goy may figure he can get away with killing the patient. What about his professional reputation? Okay, look, the guy was near death anyway, so therefore people are not going to hold it against him. As opposed to if the person is healthy, then there's no problem to go to him. On the other hand, You can have where the person is sick, but not so dangerously sick that they're near death.
Okay.
Then it's not a sakana. It's not something that you'd have to be mechal Shabbos for. Then we would say, says Tosfos, that both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yochanan would agree that one is fine because he's not going to ruin his reputation. And then you have a case, which Rabbi Yehuda is talking about, where just the opposite. The guy is so healthy, there's so little chance that under normal circumstances the treatment would kill him, that therefore the doctor may figure I can get away with it, because people will say, okay, it's not that this is a bad doctor. This doctor had something personally against this guy, and therefore he treated him badly and killed him. So therefore that's what Tosfos is saying. You have a three-way distinction. Where it's something really dangerous, something to be mechal Shabbos for, then no. Where it's not quite so dangerous, then yes. But where it's a minor thing, where no real complications are possible, then no. And that would be what Rabbi Yehuda is saying.
Okay. Let's go. Let the patient die?
No, we'll get into that point soon. Wait. Omer of chista omer ma'okva, avolim omoloi samploini yofoloi samploini ra'aloi, but says Rabbi Chista in the name of ma'okva, if the doctor is not actually treating, but he's just giving a prescription, he's giving you professional advice, this kind of medicine is good for him, this kind of medicine is bad for him, this kind of treatment or whatever is bad for him, mutter, that kind of thing is mutter, you're allowed to take that advice. Sovar, because the goy is going to figure, I can't get away with prescribing something dangerous. Shayuli mashaloi, the doctor is like the goy, the goy, again, we're not talking about a professional doctor necessarily, but this amateur or whatever, is likely to figure, just as much as this Jew asked me, he didn't after all ask me to treat him. He just asked me for my professional advice about what treatment would be good. Therefore, just as he consulted with me, just as he consulted with me, he's probably going to consult with other people as well. Therefore, I'm going to give myself a bad reputation. Therefore, we can assume that if he's prescribing something, it must be something that's safe.
As opposed to actually treating, right.
Here's another wrinkle in it. Sophic high, sophic mess. If it's a case where it's a sickness or a condition or whatever, where it's a sophic. Whether if he's treated, he'll live, or if he's not treated, he'll die, or not necessarily. Even if he's not treated,
he's not treated. So that's the case.
Hold on. So you have like this. You have a case where if no treatment is given, he might live, he might die. That kind of thing in Misrap in the hand. That's the kind of thing where you're not allowed to get healing from a goy, because then we have to be concerned that the goy may use the opportunity to kill him. On the other hand, if you don't treat him, then there's a good chance that he may survive it anyway.
Even if you know the goy, even if you...
No. Again, we're talking about, again, we're talking, again, We're talking about a goy who's not a professional, who doesn't have a professional reputation.
He's not a professional, right? But you know the goy. You know that he's honest. You know that he's unlikely to do a thing like that. You're still not allowed.
How much does that factor in? I mean, you know, we never had such a consideration before. I mean, you think you know a person, and then, you know, all of a sudden they use their opportunity. You never know. But
you let the patient die?
Because you don't necessarily let them die, because they may live or go find the Jewish doctor. Okay, right. So the read, actually, one of the Rishonim says that in general, what these did him over here, if there's no Jewish doctor available, then under any circumstances, just take a goyish doctor and have done with it. Most of the other Rishonim disagree with him, because like Rashi is saying over here, after all, if you have a goyish doctor kill him, he may treat him, he may end up killing him. Like this, if you don't treat him at all, then he may survive it, so therefore don't take the chance. But Vaday mess, but if it's a case where if he's not treated, he's certainly going to die, misrapin man, then you can have a goyish doctor treat him, because either we basically got nothing to lose. Either way, the guy's dead. The question is, what do you mean, mess? What do you mean he's going to die either way? What about the fact is, if he were not to be treated, he might live a little longer. If you allow this goy who's choshed on shvichos damim to treat him, he might kill him sooner. He won't live as long. Okay, the answer is, v'chaya shah lo chashin. The fact that he might live a little longer is not really a major concern. Now, Tosfos points out. In Hilchos Shabbos, we say that when it comes to the Pikuach Nefesh, even if you're only going to be able to save the person's life for a short time, go ahead and be Mechal al Shabbos, at least that he should live that little extra longer time.
Right.
What we're saying over here, therefore, Tosfos says, is that in that case, we say you don't do it, he's going to die, therefore, at least you're going to keep him alive for a little bit longer. What you do is over here, the fact is he's going to die if he doesn't get the treatment at all. So here, therefore, you're saying take the suffix. Yes, there is a suffix that he might potentially live less time because the goy may kill him. But on the other hand, you also have, on the other hand, he might be healed by him, and therefore better to take that chance.
Right.
When it's a question of chayesha versus not, then go ahead and have the goy do it. When it's a question where he might recover even without the treatment, then don't. Okay, where do you get this concept that we're not concerned about chayesha when it comes to such things? Because you have a pasuk in connection with our bar mitzrayim and by the gates of Shomron over there in our Torah of Mitzora. They say to each other, so what's going on? There's a siege, and there's a famine inside the city, so like this, and they say to each other, what? Gehazi and his sons, right? So they say to each other, if we were to say we should go into the city, but there's a famine in the city, so we'll die there, and they continue, and if we go to the camp of the Aramim, who are besieging, they might kill us. So they say, you know what, let's go to Machne Aram, at least they may keep us alive. So we see that Chayesha is not something you have to worry about. Even though the Aramim might kill them sooner than they would die of hunger in the city, nevertheless, that's an acceptable risk to take, where on the other hand, they might save their lives. And by the way, there was a lot of discussion among the posting about how this relates to treatments nowadays. You have all kinds of treatments and surgeries that are things where potentially it might kill the patient, but on the other hand, potentially it might save their life. So that based on this Gemara, it seems that such things would be allowed. They discussed what about if it's a question of where it's not.
Chayesha.
So that's what we're saying. So the question is, on the one hand, it might kill him sooner, the Chayesha, he might lose that short amount of time he has left. On the other hand, it might cure him, and then he'll live for a long time to come. Such a thing is considered acceptable. They talk about what about if it's not a question of danger to life, what about if it's a tremendous amount of pain where you can have some kind of surgical treatment or what have you that's risky but might help with that. Those are the kinds of things that keep Rabbanim up at night deciding these kinds of things. Okay. All right. Fine. So the question is, again, so now in the case of these Abor Mitzrayim, again, if they go to Machne Aram and they get killed there on the spot, then they've lost the Chayesha, they've lost the short amount of time that they could have lived in the city with the hunger. Obviously the answer is we're not concerned about Chayesha. So therefore, by the same logic, again, if the patient is going to die without the treatment, then go ahead and let the goyish doctor treat him. You really have nothing to lose. On the other hand, if there's a possibility that he might survive without the treatment, then better don't have the goyish doctor treat him because the goy is kosher on shvichos damim.
Chayesha means it's a sure fact he is going to go.
Right. So the question is just, is he going to go now? Right. Exactly. Okay. Fine. The Gemara says, Meisvi. I have a contradiction, though, to all of this. You're saying that Chayeshah is something that we don't have to be concerned about. Therefore, go ahead and let the Goyish doctor treat him. But we learn in a Braisa, Lo Yisav Yitin Adam Imam Minin. A person should not get into discussions with Minim, because then Minim, they're bringing proofs from Sukkim and whatever for their doctrines and whatever. You may end up following in their ways. And you should not be healed from them, even where it's a matter of chayeshah, yeah. And Maisa ben Doma ben Achoisa Shah Rabbi Shmuel, and we have in fact a story with Ben Doma, the nephew of Rabbi Shmuel, Shehi Kishay Nachash, that a snake bit him, and he was going to die without treatment. So Yaakov Ishkarskhania, who we met in the previous paragraph, Yaakov Ishkarskhania was a min. And in fact, he's the one who Rabbi Eliezer met up with, and he told Rabbi Eliezer over a vote on a pasuk, and Rabbi Eliezer enjoyed it, and therefore he ended up being taken prisoner, etc., as we have the whole story over there. So this Yaakov Ishkarskhania came to heal him, and Rabbi Shmuel did not allow, he told Ben Doma, don't do it, don't have this Yaakov heal you. And Ben Doma says to him, Rabbi Shmuel, my brother, he wasn't a brother, he was his uncle, but whatever, my relative, leave him alone, let me be healed by him. I will bring you afterward the pasuk from the Torah that such a thing is mutter.
Even his amen.
Right, yes. However, Ben Doma did not even have a chance to finish saying what he wanted to say. Until his neshama left him and he died. Kara all of Rabbi Shmuel, and Rabbi Shmuel said on him, look at this, he called out on him, Ashrecha Ben Doma, how happy you are, Ben Doma, shegufcha tahor, that your body is tahor, v'yotza neshmatcha b'tahara, and your neshama left with tahara, in that your last word, Rashi says, was the word mutter. So therefore, it's like the famous thing that we have, for example, that Rabba died saying Tahar, Tahar, and we have other examples like that. So you died saying the word Mutter. You did not violate what your colleagues, meaning the Chachamim, said. That they used to say, somebody who breaks through a fence, meaning who's over on what the Chachamim say, deserves to be bitten by a snake. And you didn't do that. So therefore, how happy you are that you didn't do that. So the question is, again, from this braisa you see that you're not allowed to be healed by Yaakov Ishkarskhania, even where it's Chayeshah, even where without the treatment he's sure going to die from a snake bite. So what do you mean? Yeah, it's a stira. The answer is shiny minus demashcha. It's different with minus, because minus is very attractive. It's easily attractive. The osila mimshach basrayu, the person may be led to follow in the ways of the minim, because the minim are people, they're always out to find converts, they're always trying to missionize and then try to get people and induce people to follow them and bring twisted proofs from Sukkim and whatnot. So therefore Rabbi Shmuel has reason to be concerned, therefore specifically because of this Yaakov Ishkarskhania, who's a min. Had it been a run of the mill guy, then Rabbi Shmuel might not have had a problem.
Mean they used to try and
convert the Yidden. Yeah, even nowadays they do. But yeah, the minim, yeah. As a matter of now, Tosfos asks the question. Tosfos says there's a little more detail to this, because after all, later on in the continuation of the Gemara on Chokhes, we have a case over there where Rabba Bahu was treated by a min. So what do you mean? If we're saying over here you're not allowed to be treated by a min, what's the deal? So Tosfos explains like this. There's a difference what kind of treatment the min is doing. Is he doing a treatment where he mentions the name of his getchka, that this getchka is going to help you? And, for example, actually, Tosfos brings over here from the Yerushalmi, that actually, so we learned before, that this Yaakov Ishkarskhania was actually a Talmud of Yeshu HaNoitzri. And therefore, so Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi that actually what he wanted to do is he wanted to heal this Ben Doma using the name of Yoshka. I'm gonna cure you in the name of Yoshka, and that kind of thing would be author. That's what Rabbi Shmuel is saying is author. In Shulchan Aruch it gets into a little more detail about that. Tosfos discusses it over here, and from there it goes into Shulchan Aruch, that it really depends. Is the treatment itself involving the name of Avodah Zarah, or in the case of a min, really, if it's involving any kind of lachash, any kind of incantation or spell or whatever, then it would be also, because a min is probably going to be using the name of Avodah Zarah, as opposed to a run-of-the-mill goy, not necessarily. It may just be some meaningless spell or whatever, and fine, it may not help, but it won't hurt either. So therefore, such a thing would be allowed. You also have, if it's a min and he wants to use any kind of spell, then it would be also. If he's treating with regular medicine, then he's no different than any other goy. Then the same rules that apply to other goyim would apply to a min. You're not concerned that you're going to follow him because he happens to be a min. But if he's using spells or whatever, that would be also. And also, with any kind of doctor, if they're using something that involves Avodah Zarah, that would also be ulcer. You're not Avodah Zarah is one of those things that are also Bahana, as we're going to learn later on the Masechta, and therefore that would be ulcer. And Shulchan Aruch actually makes a distinction. If the doctor says, for example, I want you to use leaves, let's say, from such and such a tree, which is of Avodah Zarah, then you're not allowed to do that, because obviously the goy means that he expects the Avodah Zarah to affect the cure. As opposed to if he says, I want you to use such and such leaves, and it so happens the only trees around that have such leaves are trees of Avodah Zarah, that it says in Shulchan Aruch will be mutter. Because the goy did not mention the name of Avodah Zarah in that connection. And therefore,
the tree is still a tree
of Avodah Zarah, but nevertheless, the Shulchan Aruch says that such a thing would be allowed. Tosfos brings from a Yerushalmi that says that. If he just says, bring me leaves. But that's the difference. If he says, just give me leaves, if the doctor says, I need such and such leaves, and they end up bringing leaves from Avodah Zarah, that would be allowed.
But that's the difference.
Whether it's being done in the name of a disorder or not. You may not accept it, but that's
no,
the difference.
No, I'm accepting it. But the point is, we're not allowed to have.
We're not allowed to have anah from a disorder, but
whether directly or from other people.
Okay, so here we're not talking about necessarily an asher. Here we're talking about a tree, maybe that's used, maybe an avodah stands under it or whatever. It's a type of asher. We're going to learn such things later in the Masechta, but it's still it's not. Okay, fine, but nevertheless, in this case, not one that just has an avodah standing under it, not necessarily. Okay, anyway, let's finish up over here. Okay, Omamar, so we said that Rabbi Shmuel said to Ben Doma, I'm happy for you, lo yavart al dibre chaverecha, you do not violate the words of the Chachamim, so they said if you violate what the Chachamim say, you'll be bitten by a snake. So the question is, what do you mean? He got bitten by a snake. He could have been healed by the snake. What about that he would have been over on what the Chachamim say, and then he would be bitten by another snake? Fine, he could equally be healed from that. Tosfos learns a little bit differently. The vote is that why didn't Rabbi Shmuel allow him to? The same thing. Why didn't he allow him to take the treatment? And okay, if he gets bitten again, he'll get treated again. The answer is, because what Bishmal is saying, that you could have, if you had not done the right thing, you would have been bitten by a snake of the Chachamim. In other words, you would have been bitten by a snake as a result of violating the words of the Chachamim, which for that there's no cure, klal, at all.
So
in other words, like this, Rabbi Shmal is telling him, like this, you were bitten by a regular run-of-the-mill snake. That could have been treated. But getting it treated by Yaakov Ishkar Schanya would have been over on Divrei Chachamim, not to have anything to do with Minit. Therefore, it's a good thing that you didn't, because otherwise what would have happened is, fine, you would have been healed of that first snake bite, but then you would have been bitten by another snake because of being over on Divrei Chachamim, and that kind there would be no cure for. Tosfos on that learns a little bit differently, that what it means is, okay, in the end you died, but at least you died zakai. You died without doing an Avera, whereas like this, if you had been over, then you would have been doing an Avera. Yeah. Okay, so the question is, my Havali Lameimar, what was Ben Doma planning to say? What pasuk was he planning to bring to show that it should be allowed? V'chai b'hem v'lo shiyamos b'hem. He would have brought the pasuk, v'chai b'hem, that the Torah says you should live through it, but not die through it, and therefore he would argue that even to be cured by a min would not be a problem, because at least you're keeping yourself alive to do more mitzvahs. And we'll continue tomorrow with what Rabbi Shmuel would answer to that. Zusas, Vasa, I don't know, it's like Koy and Kev. Yeah. When is it? That's right, yeah. Because you might be led to follow in their ways.
That still applies. Even if you're saying it's just because not in the name of the Avodah Zarah.
No, so that's the thing. Tosfos is saying, on the basis of the Gemara later, if the min is just doing a regular treatment or whatever, then he's no different than any other goy. Not necessarily are you going to be involved in the conversation.
Only following his ways because he's using
the name of Avodah Zarah. Yeah, but if he says, yeah, I'm healing you in the name of Yoyo, in the name of Yashka, then you're likely to start being impressed and then following in the end.
Okay.